In her office with the door shut, she read through the activities of daily living questionnaire that Dr. Davis had told her to give to John. "This should be filled out by an informant, not the patient," was typed in bold at the top of the first page. The word informant, the closed door, and her pounding heart all contributed to a feeling of conspicuous guilt, like she was hiding in some Eastern European city, in possession of illegal documents, and the police were on their way, sirens blaring. The rating scale for each activity ranged from 0, no problems, same as always, to 3, severely impaired, totally dependent on others. She scanned down the descriptions next to the 3s and assumed they represented the end stages of this disease, the end of this straight and short road that she'd been suddenly forced onto in a car with no brakes and no steering. Number 3 was a humiliating list. Must be fed most foods. Has no control over bowel or bladder. Must be given medication by others. Resists efforts of caretaker to clean or groom. No longer works. Home or hospital bound. No longer handles money. No longer goes out unaccompanied. Humiliating, but her analytical mind became instantly skeptical of the actual relevance of this list to her individual outcome. How much of this list was due to the progression of Alzheimer's disease, and how much was confounded by the overwhelmingly elderly population it described? Were the 80-year-olds incontinent because they had Alzheimer's or because they had 80-year-old bladders? Perhaps these 3s wouldn't apply to someone like her, someone so young and physically fit. The worst of it came under the heading communications. Speech is almost unintelligible, does not understand what people are saying, has given up reading, never writes, no more language. Other than misdiagnosis, she couldn't formulate a hypothesis that would render her immune to this list of 3s. It could all apply to someone like her, someone with Alzheimer's. She looked at the rows of books and periodicals on her bookcase, the stack of final exams to be corrected on her desk, the emails in her inbox, the red flashing voicemail light on her phone. She thought about the books she'd always wanted to read, the ones adorning the top shelf in her bedroom, the ones she figured she'd have time for later. Moby Dick. She had experiments to perform, papers to write, and lectures to give and attend. Everything she did and loved, everything she was, required language. The last pages of the questionnaire asked the informant to rate the severity of the following symptoms experienced by the patient in the past month: delusions, hallucinations, agitation, depression, anxiety, euphoria, apathy, disinhibition, irritability, repetitive motor disturbances, sleep disruptions, changes in eating. She felt tempted to fill in the answers herself, to demonstrate that she was actually perfectly fine and that Dr. Davis must be wrong. Then she remembered his words, "You may not be the most reliable source of what's been going on." Maybe, but then she still remembered that he'd said that. She wondered when the time would come that she wouldn't. Her knowledge of Alzheimer's disease admittedly swept the surface only lightly. She knew that the brains of Alzheimer's patients had reduced levels of acetylcholine, a neurotransmitter important in learning and memory. She also knew that the hippocampus, a seahorse-shaped structure in the brain critical for the formation of new memories, became mired in plaques and tangles, although she didn't really understand what plaques and tangles were exactly. She knew that anomia, a pathological tip of the tongue, was another hallmark symptom. And she knew that someday she'd look at her husband, her children, her colleagues, faces she'd known and loved forever, and she wouldn't recognize them. And she knew there was more. There were layers of disturbing filth to uncover. She typed the words Alzheimer's disease into Google. Her middle finger was poised over the return key when 2 jolting knocks caused her to abort the mission with the speed of an involuntary reflex and hide the evidence. Without further warning or waiting for an answer, the door opened. She feared her face read stunned, anxious, devious. "Are you ready?" asked John. No, she wasn't. If she confessed to John what Dr. Davis had told her, if she gave him the activities of daily living questionnaire, it would all become real. John would become the informant, and Alice would become the dying, incompetent patient. She wasn't ready to turn herself in. Not yet. "Come on, the gates close in an hour," said John. "Okay," said Alice. "I'm ready."